All right, here we are in Off the Hook Overtime Land on YouTube. And Kyle, you made it over?
Sure. Yeah, I'm here.
Let's go back to the Skype people. Alex, Rob, Dila, you're all here.
I am here.
Great. And our listeners will be joining us soon as well, 802-321-4225. I know we were talking about the water situation. I just wanted to mention one thing in one of the summations, which, of course, I lost in the break. Hang on, where was it? Basically, it was a situation where somebody saw what was actually happening. The intruder's timing and visibility seemed almost comical to cybersecurity experts. A supervisor monitoring a plant console about 1:30 p.m. saw a cursor move across the screen and change settings and was able to immediately reverse it. The intruder was in and out in 5 minutes. I'm wondering if it was just an employee that made a mistake and was accessing something and hit the wrong key. I just suspect there's more to this story or less to this story than what we're being led to believe. Alex?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. What's fascinating me about the story is that, first of all, the only reason we know about it is because of this press conference that was held for everyone. Of these things that we know about,
right?
God knows how many there are that we don't know about, because not every time this happens, there's a press conference held by what was essentially the police. So, you know, it's kind of strange in and of itself to have that. And at first, they seem to be very forthcoming with the details of this incident. But since then, we don't know very much else. There hasn't been a lot of other information.
No.
We have another guest here. Okay.
That's Cleo. Yep. But there have been scant details since that initial conference about this, and it shouldn't be too difficult to have additional details about this, because whoever connected to this particular machine, their IP address is going to be logged somewhere in TeamViewer.
Exactly.
Unless. Pardon me?
I agree. I smell some kind of a rat here, because, you know, I'm reading other stories that say this hack exposed vulnerability of cash-strapped U.S. water plants. I don't know why water plants are cash-strapped. If you sell water to people, they pay for it. It should pay for the plant, but whatever. It seems like this is a good opportunity to get word out that, hey, we need help. We need funding. We need attention. And, yeah, you should, but I don't know. There's something about this that just seems a little too easy and convenient. With, as you say, a lack of real details.
Well, that and, you know, seeing the cursor move across the screen, what if this person hadn't seen that? What was going to happen? Mm-hmm. I mean, there were these physical safeguards that were in place. So then why have this massive press conference for this minor incursion? I don't know. There is definitely something off with the story. There's going to be something more forthcoming. And maybe there is something more nefarious coming, which would explain the scant details since the initial press conference.
Oh, we'll keep watching it. We have a call. Good evening, caller. You're on the show.
Good evening, Overtime.
It's Bobson from Bulgaria. I assume you're in Bulgaria.
Yeah, I am. Last week you talked about the green letterbox picture.
Yeah, the thing that's on the actual YouTube channel right now, the podcast, that green mailbox has been verified as being from Republic of Ireland.
Yes, have you gotten any reply to that? Because I did some research last week about the result about 100 years ago in 1921 or 1922 when Ireland became independent. All the post boxes, and it's not a mailbox because it has the word post engraved on it, the green thing on the picture. So all the red post boxes from the Royal Mail were painted green for the Irish Mail in 1922 or 21, I think.
Wow. I'm impressed you found that out.
And this box is in front of a arched doorway with some lettering which suggests that it says Dublin Castle.
Well, you're kind of scaring me here. You're figuring out exactly where this mailbox is. Soon you'll know when the picture was taken.
the mailbox in front of Dublin Castle was the first mailbox to be painted green as opposed to the red boxes for the Royal Mail of the Great Britain or what have you.
Well, if I ever want to hide the facts about a mailbox, I know you're not the person to try that with.
Well, if you search Dublin Castle and mailbox, things come up in a search engine.
Okay. Well, anything else you want to tell us?
No. I was wrong. Don't search for mailbox. Search for postbox.
Postbox.
Because it says post on it.
Yeah, there's definitely a difference. Bobson, good as always to hear from you. I know it's very late over there where you are. What time is it?
Well, we're about 7 hours in the future here, which means
I have to do the work. Okay, so that makes it 3:06 in the morning.
The noon time trial conferences at the Senate over there are shown in the early evening for however long they decide to meet. 16 hours, they said earlier today.
You know, Bobson, one day we have to do a radio show in our morning or afternoon so that you don't always sound so tired, because we've hung out with you and you're very energetic and you don't talk like you're about to fall asleep usually. So we have to do an earlier show so that we can hear the energetic Bobson.
I don't think it's worth the bother.
Well, we'll decide that.
I'm always up to doing a show live at the conference as we've done in the past.
All right. Well, listen, we're going to move on to another phone call, but you get some sleep, and we'll hopefully talk to you again soon.
Have a wonderful day, everyone. Thanks for the show.
All right. Take care. 802-321-4225 is our phone number. 802-321-HACK. 802, of course, is the area code for Vermont, which we are not in, but we just happen to get that cool-sounding phone number. We had a bunch of stories we weren't able to get to. That's always the case with every single program that we do. This is the one I really wanted to read, though. Just because you consider someone to be in your family, even if it's not necessarily by blood, doesn't mean that they can't turn around and betray you or do things that work against you. I know it sounds kind of dark, but this story leads over to India, where a man who was being extorted by what he thought was a group of hackers found out that, in fact, it was his 11-year-old son. Oh, this is going to be one of these feel-good stories. The man claimed he was initially threatened by the group to pay a large amount of money to them unless he wanted them to leak his alleged obscene photos and family details. His email was hacked where the password was changed along with the mobile number associated with it. The hackers, in quotes, appropriately enough, even claimed that they were watching him and his family and continue to harass them. However, when the man eventually reached out to the police for help, they discovered that the IP address of the so-called hackers came from the man's own house, meaning that the threats were made from within the house. The police started to question the man's son, who later confessed that he was behind it, probably pretty quickly, being 11 years old. He told the police that he learned what he needed to know from watching videos on YouTube, such as how to avoid getting caught. As you can see, those videos didn't work that well. The police say they are continuing to investigate the matter. I don't know why. They pretty much have the whole thing solved. It's unclear as to what might happen to the kid and if he could eventually face charges. I don't know how that would go in court with dad there on the witness stand and the kid in shackles. Why would you try to do that to your own dad inside the same house? I could see if maybe he lives somewhere else, but you're right there with him. You're having dinner with him right after you threaten him. That doesn't make sense. I mean, can you really pull that off at 11? I want to see what this kid does in the future. All right, let's take this phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall Overtime. Off the Hook Overtime. Sorry, wrong show. Go ahead. Hello? I think they hung up.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, there you
are. On mute.
Oh, you were on mute. That happens on the phone, too. How about that?
It's the times we live in.
Hey, I was calling to see if any of your listeners could help me out with something. I've talked to Alex about this. This is Hack 5190 out in Wyoming. And our legislature is planning to propose a road usage tax. my understanding is that a few of the states further west of us, California, Washington, and some of them have them. And my concern, obviously, being a hacker, is privacy information. I don't want anybody sticking a device in my car that's going to know where it is 24/7 or how fast it's going or anything like that. And I'm just curious, since these things are obviously in use in other states, what your listeners or you guys know about these things to kind of help fight against it so we don't get one here.
Kyle is from Washington.
I got to admit, though, I like kind of missed this just by a little bit. In fact, the last time I got to take one of those roads was specifically the new tunnel that has replaced the viaduct on the waterfront in Seattle. At the time, it was still free. It has now since become a toll use road, and that requires that you have, I think, what's called good to go, and that is their scheme. The most exposure I've had to this type of road use scheme is actually in New York with the EasyPass system. I believe that's the type of technology you're referring to, right?
No, it's actually different.
Yeah, because okay. EasyPass is voluntary. This sounds like it's not voluntary.
But you're talking about a device that has some kind of location-based fare system? That sounds like a lot of what the road toll... Is it a road toll or road use?
It's a road use. So what it would actually do is it would have a GPS device in it, and it's going to track your usage of the roadway, right? Whether you've driven 3 miles or whether you've driven 100 miles, it's going to know that. It's going to know where you were when you drove those miles, what time of the day, and how fast you went.
Wow, it's like a black box, really.
Yes, sir. That's exactly what they're planning. I know Alex and I spoke about this. He put me in touch with the EFF, and the gentleman who he put me in contact with is out on maternity leave. Now, thankfully, the state legislation has not scheduled this for a hearing yet, so it hasn't gotten out of the committee. But, again, I'm just trying to understand other states that have these, because all of the states outsource this to some third-party company. And just like Verizon, you know, I don't really want my data in a third party's hands, and I certainly don't want them to be selling it out of the back door.
So are you for sure – you're saying Washington does, in fact, use this? Because I'm not aware of it being in use. Are you saying it is being proposed as sort of a next step in taxation for roads?
No, from what I can tell, it was looked at and it was approved in Washington. It was approved in California. And I think that Colorado actually looked at it as well. I don't know if Colorado has approved it or not, though.
Okay, is it not implemented? Is it statewide, or is it just different counties that are implementing it in the state? I'd have to learn a lot more about this. I'm not aware. I am a driver in Washington State, and I am really interested. I've not heard of this and been notified by the state licensing about eligibility, and I have about the passes, and I know that's a big deal in like specific projects, like I mentioned in Seattle there, and of course the same goes out here with toll roads.
Yeah, so from what I can tell, and you're right, passes are slightly different, and as you guys have alluded to, you know, that's typically a voluntary system. So I create an account with some agency, and on the East Coast where you guys are at, it would be an EasyPass agency, right? They send me a transponder. I put that on my vehicle. And then when I use a roadway, as you enter or exit one of those gantries at a plaza, there's an antenna that's above your vehicle. And what it does is it activates it. The device, the transponder sends the information. The various agencies along the East Coast exchange information. And wherever you have an account and a credit card on file, they charge you for the usage of that roadway. If you don't have a transponder, then typically they take images of your license plate, OCR those images, and then contact the appropriate state agency where that vehicle is registered, and will send you, depending on what state or commonwealth you drove through and what roadway it is, you'll either get a invoice or you'll get a fine.
Yeah,
if you travel the road.
Well, the way it's happened now in New York, where toll booths have been eliminated, not everybody has an EasyPass, so I don't know if there's a penalty involved. I think it's a higher rate. It will take a picture of your license plate and mail you a bill. Do you have any indication what would happen to somebody if they didn't have this device on their car in Wyoming after this is put into place?
Well, according to the legislation so far, they realize that there are some people who either don't have an ODB2 port on their vehicle or do not want to have this on their vehicle. Maybe they have something else in there, like one of those progressive safe driver discount dongles.
I was just going to mention that. That's exactly what this sounds like if it is OBD2.
It is OBD2. So the plan is to have some alternate method, although that's certainly not documented or described how that would work. And my guess would be is that would put the onus on me as the vehicle owner to report to the state how many miles I drove. And then I obviously owe the state so much money per mile for my usage of the roadway. Now, the reason they want to track it through a GPS is, as you may be aware, Wyoming has a lot of territory, but we do not have a lot of roads. So there are lots of driving that occurs on BLM territory, on private lands, on farms, you know, ranches, those types of things. They would not be taxable. So they need to know where your vehicle is 24/7 when it's moving.
What is BLM territory?
Bureau of Land Management.
Oh.
Exactly.
Okay, I totally misread that.
Yeah, you have
sorry,
like.
Sorry, yeah, I guess you may have. Sorry.
No, I thought Wyoming was a lot more advanced than I get it credit for.
So
we're about as red as you can get, although I'm certainly.
That's what surprises me. So how are they implementing things like this with all this you know, individuality and you know, government is bad and all that kind of thing, and yet this seems super Orwellian to me.
Well, I would agree with it. It is, but the interesting thing is this state. And I keep wanting to say Commonwealth because I obviously moved here from Pennsylvania. But we have no regulations against PII, right? We have no protections for my PII. So once the state gets it, they could give it to anybody. Now, back east, and I presume New York is the same as the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, where when you register your vehicle, it's registered with the state. You obviously get a state license plate. And in Pennsylvania, you pay a different fee, whether it's a passenger vehicle, a station wagon, a truck, and based on weights. Here in Wyoming, it's very similar to California, where your vehicle plates are based on the MSRP of the vehicle when it was new, regardless of what you've paid for it. And not only that, the vehicles are registered by the county, even though you get a state plate, rather than the vehicle being registered with the state.
That's weird.
It's a different system because the county makes the bulk of that money. That's how the county operates.
Sure.
They don't tax you.
Yeah, I had no idea that California was so different.
Alex, I want you to weigh in here. Go ahead.
Yeah, and hey, Hack5190, I was thinking about this too, and it is unfortunate that my good friend over at the EFF is on material leave. Hopefully he will get back to us. He's a very good guy. But the other thing I was thinking about here, and I may be able to help you out as well, is since this appears to be at the bill level, it's going to certainly be a local issue, and privacy activists, civil rights activists, et cetera, would probably want to lobby the legislature to kill this thing before it does, in fact, become a law, because it does seem rather intrusive, at least from the way that you're describing it. And so in my opinion, I think this would probably be an issue better suited for your local ACLU chapter, the ACLU of Wyoming. And I may be able to help you there because one of my law partners lives in Montana, and his wife is the executive director of the ACLU in Montana. So I imagine she probably knows who the ACLU director is in Wyoming, and we can connect you.
You know, Montana and Wyoming are very, very different.
Oh, well, yes.
Yeah.
They are,
sure.
But they're very similar as well.
Well, that's a surprise.
Right.
Okay. That's very revealing, you know, what you're sharing with us. And I'd certainly like to know more about it as a car driver myself.
Yeah, it's so curious. It makes me really have more questions. Like, what is the advantage? Why do I want this as a consumer? What is the payoff for giving this stuff up? And I think it also kind of relates to some of the other stuff we were talking about with privacy, and we were talking about Section 230 stuff where that might not even be the best route. There's so many bigger, more philosophical, privacy-related things that have not been addressed. And I think modeling and revisiting ideas and schemes like the GDPR in Europe, which was instituted not too long ago, those ways of future-proofing a lot of these kinds of laws and technologies and strategies would go a really, really long way to head this stuff off instead of us being reactive and saying, oh, let's go and beg and plead with social media to try harder and, you know, maybe we'll fix it after it's totally blown up in our faces. I just think that's it's nice, but it's not effective.
Well, that's why we're having this conversation, and hopefully we learn a lot more about this. I think there's a good article in this for sure, because I want to know more about that technology. Now, Rob, you have something to say about this. Rob? You're muted, Rob.
Maybe he's on mute.
Yeah, you're definitely on mute.
Yeah, that happens.
All right.
I just wanted to invite any of our listeners who have direct experience of this, if you're in a state where this happens, or if you've had access to one of these pieces of equipment, anything you want to tell us, we're interested in hearing. So either call us here or send us an email, oth@2600.com.
Yeah, I will email you some links to PDFs for documents from the various states that have looked into this. And this isn't necessarily brand new technology. This has existed on commercial over-the-road vehicles for years, right? Fleet operators like to know where their vehicles are.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to know, you know, if somebody is stopped along the roadway, idling for 2 hours, wasting time, et cetera. So this technology has been around for quite some time. It's just now that they want to bring it down into the regular passenger vehicle and your consumer's level, for lack of a better way to describe that. But it is interesting because as a resident, they would know where I am, and this is supposedly going to help pay for the fuel, you know, from the fuel taxes that the out-of-state people drive. When they come in, they won't have these, so they're gonna pay for their usage of Wyoming roadways through fuel taxes. But I buy my fuel at the exact same gas station and don't get a discount when I go in as a consumer. So I can say in Pennsylvania, when I owned boats, I used to track how many gallons of fuel that I bought and used in my boats because the Fish and Game Commission would get that tax money back from the Department of Transportation. Here, I'm going to have to somehow track my fuel usage as well, and then my fuel usage on the public roads so that I can try to get that waived against what they're charging me for the miles I've driven. It's a logistics nightmare for mm-hmm. me as a vehicle owner and user of the roadway, but more to one of the points that Kyle had brought up. I mean, the only protections we have here is a breach notification. Beyond that, there is no PII protection in this state.
Yeah, and I could see it easily be implemented as in the form of an app. I mean, now that you brought it up, and like, okay, so you know, drivers that don't have smartphones, okay, you can sign up for $49.99 or whatever, you know, make it up, and then you get some device that is a part of this system, as you said, like for the same style as trucking and has been implemented before. But it really is interesting that this is the solution perhaps to sidestepping increases in gas taxation, specifically.
Oh, no, that's on the table as well for this year.
Oh, great. Yeah. And we're supposed to welcome this and turn a blind eye at the same time because maybe we'll have nicer roads in Wyoming. I mean, I don't know. You would know better as a driver there.
Well,
but
that's always held out as you know,
that's
the carrot in front of somebody.
Oh, golly. Well, let me just sign right up. Yeah. It's a little cynical.
All right. Thanks for your call and for all that information.
Oh, you're welcome, guys. Have a good evening.
All right. Take care. Wow. Jess writes into us saying Washington State website has multiple reporting options, including prepaying for blocks of miles and self-reporting of odometer readings. Yeah, I don't like where this is going. I don't want to have a black box in my car. I don't want to be given, you know, tickets for doing slightly wrong things at any time. It just feels like utter surveillance. And, yeah, it might work for fleet operators on massive 18-wheelers and things like that where you're working for somebody. But as individuals, no. I'm kind of surprised Wyoming, of all places, is pushing something like this. But it seems like, you know, he had a potential solution just by registering a car outside the state. and then you wouldn't have to do
honestly,
it at all.
That's really common in Washington. There's tons of people that get organ plates. They go wherever else, and then the car ends up being there constantly. And, you know, that there's all kinds of – and that's just from tabs on license plate registration. People don't want to pay whatever it is because it's rated based on the type of vehicle and emissions, I believe, was part of it. And so if it's a more environmentally costly car, you might have higher tabs. So if you want the sporty car, you have to pay. And if
what's
you don't
a tab, Kyle?
Like registration for the year.
Oh, okay. Right? So we don't use that word here.
It's like
in New York.
A sticker. Uh-huh. Yeah. So there's it's a cat and mouse thing, so it's really interesting.
802-321-4225 is our phone number. Line is open. And when I say line, I mean it. We only have one line. If you aren't the person talking to us, you get voicemail, and we can't turn it off. We're sorry. And that's just the way the system is set up. Alex, looks like you have something to say. You've got your...
I always have something to say. I probably forgot what it was at this point. But I do think this is an interesting caller. And I think, again, the local chapter of the ACLU may be best suited to deal with this. But I'm really surprised at this notion of individual taxation, that, it's a very specific thing based on usage. And maybe, large trucking companies are going to be paying more of their fair share. But it just seems like a major privacy invasion for a minor benefit.
Yes.
You're going to be paying a little bit less in taxes, perhaps, but you have to give up all the privacy.
Alex, it's not a minor benefit for the consumer. It's a major benefit for the government because they get to track everybody. And well, people willingly go along with this because of the promise of, saving a few pennies.
Well, then the issue, too, is that if the government is tracking that, how are they storing that particular data? With whom are they
sharing
it? Badly,
that's how. It's going to get leaked. People are going to find it. It's a nightmare. We've learned this so many times.
But more than people finding it, sure, it can be leaked. But also, if that data is available on almost every citizen in the state, and I say this every time we talk about data repositories, is that it's going to be subpoenaed. People are going to ask the government for it. If they know that data is there, mm-hmm. you're going to see subpoenas for that information. And it will be shared because at that point you're going to have to respond to legal process like the government is. So it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out. I'd like to learn more about other states that have implemented some kind of measure like this.
Well, if I can, as long as I'm spewing out acronyms, EFF and ACLU, I think one more might be helpful, and that's AAA. They might take a very keen interest in this in the state of Wyoming, and maybe they're good at leading lobbying efforts. I'm just not sure exactly what direction they'll go in on this. But I think with enough consumer input, they might make the right choice. Our phone number, 802-321-4225. We're going to give it a couple of minutes, see if any more calls come in. If not, we'll sign off for the night. Anything else happening in our lives that we didn't get a chance to talk to on the show? Talk about on the show? No?
Well, I'm here in Pennsylvania, and we've had literally now within the last week and a half about 4 feet of snow. In the Poconos.
We've got snow here in New York. We've got snow, too. We've had, three snowstorms.
This is crazy. This felt like I was living in another planet where it just snows all the time. I mean, it was 3 days without the snow stopping at all.
I hope you're not complaining. I hope this isn't complaining. I hope this is just you expressing your wonderment at the whole thing.
Well, it is wonderment, and it is absolutely gorgeous. But, there are some inconveniences that go along with having, to shovel out snow in the balcony and all these kinds of things. It's been crazy. And having lived in the 802 for 3 years myself, I mean, I'm no stranger to snow, but I feel like this was really something extraordinary over the last week and a half to see this. And if we're not going to have a caller, I can tell a really interesting story about snow in the 802.
And if you are a caller, you can interrupt Alex's story midway through.
Yeah,
so absolutely. Think of the fun. Go ahead.
So my first year of law school in Vermont, my girlfriend at the time has a pit bull. The pit bull's name was Never. There's another story, naming a dog an adverb, but...
Never?
In any event, Never.
Never an adverb?
She was rescued from Brentwood. She fell into the dive tank at the Brentwood public pool, and my girlfriend was a lifeguard there, and she saved this dog and adopted her. But anyway, so Never had never actually seen snow this high. When we came back from the Christmas break, there was about 3 feet of snow where I lived in Vermont, up this dirt road on a mountain, and it was, she had a lot of difficulty.
Wow, never is an adverb. I'm sorry, I just looked that up.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, yeah, I learned something today. Okay, I'm sorry, continue.
Well, because, you know, look, it's modifying a verb, right? You never do something.
Yeah, but most adverbs end in L-Y, but I'm not going to belabor the point.
Sure. Yeah, well they modify verbs, right? So, you know, this is a minor digression. Right? You don't
never ending.
Well, wait, never ending is not an adverb. I don't think. No.
So, in any event, Never is unable to do her business. She's unable to go to the bathroom outside because the snow is so deep. This poor pit bull is just sinking into the snow. She can't go, so she's holding in this poop for 3 days, right? And
oh boy,
she hasn't gone. We go grocery shopping in New Hampshire, in West Lebanon.
I'm sorry, I just have to break in because dogs, for some reason, why is it that there's undue attention on how they relieve themselves? That's all they seem to be about. You never have this with cats. Any other animal in the animal kingdom, they do their business. You don't know about it. It just happens somewhere off camera. But with dogs, front and center. You know, I drive down the street. There's a dog in the middle of a lawn, you know, doing things. And,
yeah, I'm getting triggered.
Why?
I grew up on the dog farm.
But
I just don't need
what
this.
What is it about these animals that's
this.
What they're all about? Or is it us? Are we doing it to them?
It might just be you fixating on it. I don't know.
Uh-huh. You know, dog's out walking. Why is a dog out walking? Because he has to defecate or urinate or something like that, you know? Why is the cat out? The cat's out because it wants to be out.
They've been living with us for 10,000 years. You think by now they've learned to use a toilet. I get it. Yeah. So, in any event, Never, she can't go to the bathroom. She's holding it in for 3 days. Come back from the grocery store. And I lived in a barn. Actually, it was a barn that was converted into a living space. And so we went upstairs.
You lived in the barn?
And I lived in a barn.
That explains a lot. You were brought up in a barn then.
No, I wish I was, actually. Hmm. It would have been better. But the in any event, there was that telltale smell that she had gone to the bathroom, finally, after 3 days. And so I go into the little study area that I had with all my first-year law books, and she had done her business entirely and squarely without touching the carpet or anything off the mark on one of my law textbooks. And it was a textbook for my tort class. You know, torts are non-civil wrongs, so like a personal injury claim would be a tort claim. And the name of the book on which she defecated, I'm not kidding, was Accidental Justice.
I hope, Alex, I hope, because you will never get this opportunity again. I hope you took a picture of this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was true. I mean, the dog had a sense of humor. It was incredible. It was Accidental Justice.
Every legal seminar into the void of history in the future will have a picture of this if you took a picture.
You know, I don't know, actually. I don't remember if I had a picture. This was way back in 2002.
I would go out and buy a camera to take a picture of that. Come on. It's,
yeah,
it's such commentary.
Back into the snow. You know, somewhere I might. I might, actually.
All right. I think we're out of listeners and out of time. So I want to thank people for calling and for writing and for listening and for just being there. And we, of course, will be back next week for both Off the Hook and Off the Hook Overtime. See you guys.
Bye.
Bye.